episode 110 of the Meme Factory podcast. We are joined this week by Bob Burnett. We are sponsored by Simply Bitcoin. This is a Bitcoin-only daily show. Check them out at youtube.com/simplybitcoin. And we are sponsored by CryptoCloaks. CryptoCloaks strives for quality products and innovative solutions via Bitcoin signing devices and Bitcoin nodes. Check out the Yellow Edition MK4 cold card case at CryptoCloaks.com. Enjoy the show.
We haven't been shocked
yet. Okay. Because
that's all I'm saying.
Yeah. It's coming.
That's what she said.
Hey-o.
All right. Welcome, everybody. Welcome in. You made it to another episode of the Meme Factory podcast. This is stream test number 110. This evening, we are joined by Bob Burnett. It's his second appearance on the show. Bob, can you say hi to everybody?
Hey, everybody. Glad to be back.
Bob, you are you own Barefoot Mining. You're right. On Twitter as BoomerBTC and a few other recent projects, if you want to give the elevator pitch on those real quick.
Yeah, well, I am on the board of directors and an investor in Ocean, which maybe you'll want to talk about at some point tonight. I also run the Barefoot Bitcoin Fund, which is a Bitcoin-only investment fund. I think that probably covers it for this audience.
I think that probably does a good job. Well, Bob, you know the rules on this show. If you'll check your DMs, your inbox on Twitter, you've got the ad copy for the week. And if you can rip through it, we can have SusCorp get us paid.
Oh, how exciting. Yeah. All right. Here we go. Hi there. Bob Burnett here. And this episode of the Meme Factory podcast is brought to you by SusCorp and their new pool filter, the stool separator. Do you have unwanted guests mingling their fecal matter with your pool? Does their problematic pooping require some less than ideal means of containment? Well, I've got just the thing for you. The latest pool filter from SusCorp, the stool separator. This is not your average pool filter, not spelled with a K. The stool separator is designed to tackle the toughest, slimiest, and greediest of grime, leaving your pool crystal clear. You know how it is? Wizard hats, wands, JPEGs, and all the unwanted stuff just finds its way in. But with our stool separator filter, it's just like having a guardian for your pool, keeping out what doesn't belong. Imagine diving into your pool and swimming swiftly and with minimal friction from one end to the other. That's the kind of clean we're talking about. Efficient, effective, and reliable. And the best part? It's incredibly easy to use. Just set it up and watch it work. It's magic. So if you're tired of peering into the pool that's less than inviting, it's time to switch to SusCorp. With our stool separator, you can say goodbye to the hassle of constant cleaning and hello to a pool that's always ready for a swim. Ready to transform your pool experience? Check it out with SusCorp. Pool separator, pool filter, clean pools, no fuss. That's our promise to you. And if you know one thing, it's that SusCorp never breaks a promise. SusCorp does not recognize this advertisement as a binding agreement to not break promises.
Very well done, Bob. Thank you kindly.
Yeah. Very nice. Good job.
Yeah. Well done.
Double this week since we didn't get paid last week.
Exactly. We can get our kids fed. It's good.
Excellent.
All right.
I'm reminded of that Bill Murray scene in Caddyshack where he eats the baby Ruth.
Exactly. You know, that entire scene prompted a thread of mine recently that got a lot of engagement, let's say, from all sectors. And I likened the Ordinals Wizards to people coming and defecating in a pool. I was curious because you're on the mining side of things, and the incentives for miners right now are such that they're getting paid a lot more to include these these transactions and their blocks. And I wanted to see what your thoughts on the entire ordinals issue is.
Yeah, well, it's a both a
Complicated.
deep and broad topic. I'll start with this. So I think the bigger issue is maybe being missed by a lot of people. And the bigger issue really revolves around the fact that six pools in the world. So there's six points in the world where over 90% of the blocks are created. If we don't do something to disseminate and distribute the block template creation, there's an existential risk to at least the Bitcoin we know. I'm not saying Bitcoin won't exist, but the Bitcoin that we know and the way it operates is at risk if we don't make that change. So my partnership, my joining the board, my investment in Ocean, all of those things are all precipitated by that. That we can certainly get into, what's spam, what's not spam, what should be in a block, what should not be in a block. But the first and foremost thing we got to worry about is who's deciding what gets in a block. And do we have enough dissemination of that? Because if it's six points, if that's where we sit. And by the way, four of them are Chinese-based companies. Two of them are US companies that are KYC pools. If that's it, then we got a real problem. And so I think we get caught into a lot of what should be in a block, which, or excuse me, should an ordinal or an inscription or a BRC20 token, all these sort of things, are those valid things within a block? Certainly active discussion point, but I think the real important thing is, geez, what's being done to disseminate the block template creation? That's what I'm really in it for. Now, given that, it's my opinion that the ordinals groups, the inscriptions are largely abusing the system. They are taking advantage of the witness discount. It is not a foregone conclusion that in the long run, including them in blocks, is economically disadvantaged to miners. You can look at individual blocks and you can say yes, but I don't think it's foregone that they necessarily are always economically disadvantaged. Excuse me. And I think the damage that's done to people that can't get their blocks in is somehow forgotten. I think, and I also think it's a misnomer to think that when you measure economic advantage, it's only about the block that's being processed. Have we become so high time preference or so short-sighted that we're not thinking about the long term? So, like, I find it funny, some people have been critical saying, well, if you're a miner and you're mining with Ocean and you're not getting every freaking sat in every single block, that you're doing a disservice to your investors or your owners, or you're not maximizing economic advantage. But if let's say there is a mining pool or a mining organization that makes a contribution, let's say to an organization like Satoshi Action Fund or the Bitcoin Policy Institute, how is that really any different? I mean, that seems like an investment in the long-term benefit of Bitcoin. So if you feel as a miner or as somebody creating a block template that not including certain types of transactions doesn't maximize that benefit, but it's for the long-term good, then I don't really see the problem. One of the ways I like to phrase it is, like, I think if I'm a minor, which I am, right, I feel I have an obligation to protect the mothership. And, you know, the mothership is the Bitcoin in the way that permissionless, censorship free, all these sort of attributes that we know and love. Like I have an obligation to protect that. And so if I choose to protect it by looking at the transaction set and selecting a certain group of transactions that I believe protect the mothership in the long run and those attributes, then I feel that is the best economic decision.
Can we back it up just a tad? Because I want to get you to, I don't know how many of our viewers understand what block template creation even means. Could you
give
an example of what that is?
Yeah, I don't know what that is at all.
Okay. I apologize. Okay. So right now, there is a mempool. So the mempool is a place where pending transactions go. So if I was going to send Greg, let's say, some Bitcoin right now, a true on-chain transaction, I'd sign that transaction from, and it would be posted to a place called the mempool.
And then I send two back.
Yes. Yeah. You're catching on. Now, that mempool right now has 350,000 transactions in it. As I did earlier today, there's 350,000 of them sitting there. When I sent that transaction to Greg, I also included some fees. You could think of it as a tip. So I'm basically tipping the miners to say, hey, pick my transaction. The bigger the tip, the more likely they're going to pick my transaction. Why is that important? Well, in an average block, only 3,000 transactions can be included. So if there's 350,000 of them sitting there waiting to be processed, the miners go through a system by which, a set of criteria by which they decide which ones they're going to put in to the block. And that's called the block template. So the way the block template works is there's certain information, a block header, some information from the previous block that gets included. But mostly it's, hey, by what criteria am I going to pick my 3,000 out of the 350,000? So that's the block template creation. So what I was saying before is right now in the current structure of Bitcoin, there's really only 6 points where almost every block is created. And what we need in reality are hundreds, if not thousands, of those, because people like Elizabeth Warren or the three-letter agencies here in the US or the Chinese government or places like that, they can very easily find who the 6 pools are, and they can very easily enforce a set of rules or force a set of criteria upon those organizations. So what?
Yeah, but those are indicators, right? Like those are like pointers. You can switch right away.
Well, but here's the thing, Yellow. So as a miner, there's another misnomer, okay, or a mislabel. Companies like Riot or even Barefoot, frankly, the truth of the matter is we're not miners today. We are hashers, and there's a distinction. So what we do today is we give our hash rate to a pool, and the pool uses our hash rate to mine a block, and then they pay us. Okay. So the way it should be, in my opinion, is the pool acts as an aggregator or disseminator of information. So let's say all of us decided we were going to contribute our hash rate and be a pool, the meme factory pool, right? We would each contribute a percentage of the hash rate to it, and then the pool would disseminate the money to us. You know, a pool, one way in which to think about pools, this distinction, and it's a little subtle, you know, let's say there was a big lottery. Okay. And so What we did was we said, hey, we want to all be in the lottery. So what we're going to each do is we're going to give, let's say, Greg $5. And we each give Greg $5. Greg goes down to the 7-Eleven, right? And he takes our money. Greg picks the numbers. And he holds the tickets, right? Then if we win, then Greg gives all the money out. So that's one way that a pool could operate. But a second way we could operate is we could each go on our own and buy $5 of lottery tickets. And now we give those lottery tickets to Greg. But we've each picked our own numbers, right? But we're still going to share if we win. So that's kind of the difference. I know it sounds subtle, but the difference is, do you want to pick your own numbers? Or do you want to let Greg pick the numbers? And I want to pick my own numbers.
That makes sense.
I think that that's really what I'm getting at is.
Yeah, but we both can agree that, like, in both cases, there is a buffer of centralization there. I get it. But that can change anytime we don't agree with it, with the rules.
Yeah, I think Bob's just getting at the different structures a pool could
use. Okay. I get it.
Yeah. And so Ocean is like where we're going with Ocean is we each can pick our own lot, our own numbers, right? But we're still going to share if we win. Versus, let's say, a pool like Foundry. Foundry's going to pick all the transactions. And by the way, we're going to trust.
So when you say that, you're picking your own numbers, you're talking about who you're going to include in a block.
Right. So that's the analogy of what transactions go in the block. And by the way, if each of us pick our own numbers, right, we know for sure if the pool won, right? So if in this case, I know for sure that the pool won because I gave you those numbers, Greg, right? So I'm going to know. In the case of Foundry, and I'm not accusing Foundry of not of winning blocks and not telling anybody.
No, but they're in a position to do that.
But they have that capability. They also have the opportunity to accept fees, out of band fees, for performing this function and not sharing them. Again, I'm not accusing them of that. I'm just saying it's possible. There's no way to audit it. There's no way to know it. And if Bitcoiners are anything, it's a, you know, don't trust, verify group, right? So
let me tweet something. Breaking news: Bob Burnett is accusing.
Yeah.
Go on.
But, you know, I think it's a scary proposition because you don't know when somebody gets captured. Like when is a pool captured? When is a miner captured? The other thing I want to point out is that big pools, like, or big miners, big hashers, again, I'm not accusing anybody specifically of this at the moment, but if you're a big public miner, it is very difficult for you to switch pools. Very difficult. So technically, it's easy, right? You just change a couple fields. As a practical matter, though, you are bound by what your auditors and regulators and finance people and all that say. I was part of a debate, actually. There was a debate at Unconfiscatable in Vegas in July and early December. And the debate, I loved it, by the way. I think we need more of that at conferences. Instead of a panel, it was a debate. And the debate was, is public mining good for Bitcoin? And I was representing the private miner side with HT, Huddle Tarantula, who I believe has been a guest on here recently. It's a good guy. He and I were representing the private side, and we had a couple guys on the public side. One of the public guys admitted, he said, hey, I am a Foundry client. And even if I wanted to change pools, it would take me several months at best if I got it approved. And because of the very reason I just said, like so I'm just reiterating what he's already
bureaucratic layers on top of the business.
And even regulatory layers, right? We're talking about auditors and regulators and SEC and like that sort of stuff. Like there's a certain degree of capture. And so some of you may have heard me talk about elephants and horses and rabbits in the past, but I also couple it with wild or captive. And I think people are starting to understand when I use the term captive, when a company or a mining site is captive, I mean, they're almost all on grid, right? It means that the energy that they need to run their operation is permissioned. They need somebody's permission to run their operation. And that permission could go away, or it could be taxed or regulated in a certain way. But captured or captive also means things like this, that they become very subject to whether it's OFAC compliance or, you know, the SEC comes in and says you have to do things a certain way. Well, they have to do things a certain way. And what I think, well, at an individual level, I think there are some really good people in some of those companies and good Bitcoiners. As a company, they're not really Bitcoiners. They're first and foremost objective
macro mission
is maximizing short-term profit.
At this point, for whoever is listening, I have to say that's the framework we're talking about, a very US-centric, because Bitcoin is everywhere. It's not only in the United States of America. Like,
what?
Some places geographically where they're mining, they don't have so much red tape. They don't have so much obstacles. They just don't do that. They're freer in that aspect. I understand why we're talking about specifically the States, because it's the biggest market, but I have to point it out.
No, I don't have a problem with that at all, Yellow. In fact, I encourage it. For my company in 2024, our number one objective is to become more wild and become more geographically dispersed. And by that, I mean outside the U.S., because I worry about that. But the truth of the matter is the vector of the industry is toward more big sites in the United States. That's you know, so what we have to do is, as a community and ecosystem, we have to encourage more diversity of sites, geographically, the pools that they're in, where the block templates are created, what power sources are used. All these sort of things are crucial, because it's very easy, I think, to get to a tipping point where too much control is in too centralized of an area. And all these things have a tendency to kind of move toward these vectors, right? They push toward centralization. So the only way to go against them is to fight them. And in a lot of cases, I think it's only principled efforts that will do that. Economic incentive, there's... I think people that look at things with more than short-term economic incentive lenses are crucial to Bitcoin. And it's one of the reasons, like, my company is private. I plan to stay private, is it subjects me to a lot less of those pressures.
If I may, I'm going to diverse a little bit in the subject, but it is related, I feel. Talking about all that red tape the big public miners have in the States, and especially with the ETF coming very, very soon, and that product being controlled and safe, as they advertise it.
Well-regulated product.
Yeah. Do you think that that red tape is going to expand to, let's say, hosting your wallets? Are you gonna? Do you think your opinion that kind of red tape gonna become a bigger issue even for plebs like us?
Yes, I do. I at least the pressure is gonna be there.
I agree. Yeah. I
think it's a symptom of there's no way for Bitcoin to not go through at least attempts for those things. Like, because I mean, what are we doing? I mean, we're fighting against the world's power structure and wealth structure, like all those establishments. Like, we can't expect that those currently in positions of prominence in that area are going to go quietly, and they're going to fight back with this. I mean, the Elizabeth Warrens of the world are going to fight, and I don't think they'll win. It's hard for me to imagine a scenario where they win, but that doesn't mean they can't make life difficult. But I you know, I'll go back to this block template thing. I know it may be kind of a new topic for a lot of people. To me, that is the most imminent danger. Like, it's not if we maintain a free and robust block template creation environment, or maybe I should say return to one, because we don't have one today, then I think it makes all these other things really, really difficult to enforce. Because every 10 minutes, the transactions keep coming. And if they don't know where they're coming from and who's picking and what criteria they're using to pick, then the things, everything keeps marching on. But we lose control of that, then I think all bets are off.
So you're in favor of a freer template being used?
Yeah, I mean, see, that's the funny thing about Ocean. So,
yeah, that's why
Ocean. Yeah, I mean, and Ocean, the standard template, and it's been fairly prominent. Says, hey, there's a bunch of transactions filling the mempool that are doing things like abusing the witness discount, that are filling blocks up, that are making things more expensive. And so the template choice, the base template choice of Ocean at inception was to not include that stuff. Mm-hmm. But also, and I think this is partly what's hidden, the real mission of Ocean in the long run is to say pools shouldn't be really the ones making the template choices. The miners should. And so the mission of Ocean, this is just a starting point. And the real mission, which God willing comes in a handful of months or so, is everybody can pick their own. And then maybe you have hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands potentially of different points of block template creation. And at that point, I think it becomes impossible to enforce any sort of censorship. And you may have one block where the person creating the template hates the wizards and God bless them, right? And they don't do that. But the next guy might say, no, wide open, okay?
Whoever does the wrong thing, gonna lose money. It's simple.
Well, but if we're all in the pool, I'll share in the, like, let's say my templates don't include any spam. Okay. But okay. I'm part of the pool. So if we win, the guy that had it wide open, he gets a share of the template I created, but I get a share of the template he created. In the end, I don't think it matters, because I think the economics are such that it will be impossible for the Ordinals guys to exist. Like, I cannot envision a scenario. I think they are occupying a very limited space or a limited point in time where there is some, the fees are just cheap enough, demand for block space is just small enough that they can come in and create this disruption. But I think as soon as, like, ironically, as BlackRock and some of these bigger guys come in and they start trying to move bigger amounts of money through the mempool, through these transactions, I think they'll push all this out. Now, it does mean for the average pleb that fees are going to go up. I mean, I gave a speech at BitBlock Boom on this, but I said, you know, get ready in the next cycle. I define the next cycle as the next four-year cycle, right? Beginning with the halving. And I think by the end of that, we will have face-melting fees. Like the things we've seen recently will pale in comparison to what's coming. And it won't be ordinals. It's just going to be demand, right? It's like we have, if there's 8 billion people in the world, there's 333 million companies in the world. We're sitting at like 0% adoption of the companies, you know, and we're sitting at what, maybe, I don't know, maybe at best a percent of the globe, but probably well under that number in Bitcoin. So what does it look like with, let's say, a 6 to 10% adoption of the world's population and a couple percent adoption of the world's companies? Well, there's only 53,000 blocks a year. If you do the math, that's what you'll find, right? There's about 53,000 blocks per year. There's roughly 3,000 transactions per block. There's a little bit we could do to still stretch that, but we'll do that. We'll call that 200 million transactions a year. That's the capacity of the network. So doesn't really matter much how you slice it and dice it. When we get to a point where there are, let's say there's 5% world adoption, that's 400 million people. And let's say a couple million companies sharing 200 million transactions in a whole year. And every in is one, and every movement on chain and every movement off chain. I mean, those are one. So there's just not enough, right?
So what I got out of that is you think we're going to hit 5% adoption inside the next 4 years?
I'm just giving you that number just to keep the math simple. But even if we hit 1%, let's say we hit a true 1%, like 1% of users, that's 80 million people. Right. So I give this example about scarcity, and I say scarcity is a nonlinear function. So the example I give is this. Imagine you own an apple tree. It's the only apple tree in the world. And every day it produces 100 apples. At a point when only 95 people per day want apples, they're not very expensive. But the minute 101 people want apples, they start getting really expensive. And so I think if we look at demand for block space over the last year, it's been kind of vacillating between like 95 and 101. These periods like we're going through right now are examples of the 101. We've had some quieter periods where it's more like 95, but we're sitting right on that threshold. We haven't felt yet what it feels like when demand for apples is 120 or 150 or 200, and there's still only 100 a day. But we haven't even, that's why I say, and it's a nonlinear function, right? The difference, we can see in short windows, we can see fee structures go up 10x, 20x, 30x in really short windows, just on that short change in scarcity, right? So I think it's a lot like, we, as Bitcoiners, we understand the scarcity of the 21 million, but what we haven't grasped yet is that block space is also absolutely scarce in any window of time. Like I just told you, block space next year, 2024, there will be 53,000 blocks. There will be roughly 3,000 transactions per block. And so even if I'm generous and round up, say that's 200 million transactions, there's almost nothing we can do to change that. So ordinals or not, I see this as being like face melting. And so one of the things I've done is say, hey, like if you if you haven't done your UTXO management, you know, get your UTXOs in like a million sat or better increments, so that in the future you're not stuck with a bunch of tiny UTXOs. You could theoretically, the nightmare is somebody spent the last 5 or 6 years DCAing $25 or $50 of Bitcoin a week, moving it to cold storage, and they're sitting there with 1,500 tiny UTXOs, and they think they own half a Bitcoin or a Bitcoin or whatever it adds up to, right? But what they really have is like, it's worse, but you know, think of it as like you have $1 million in pennies. Like, what do you do with $1 million in pennies? Is it really spendable? Like, it's kind of like that. Like, you can maybe get somebody to take them, but you're not going to get $1 million from it. You're going to get way less. So, you know, this is kind of, I think this is that warning period for people. Like, this is I'll put it another way too. This is the end of an era. It's the end of the introductory period of Bitcoin. We had 15 years of using the world's most secure network for free on demand. You know, that was a gift. And by the way, I think that's what the subsidy gave us, right? Most people think of the subsidy as something for the miners. I say, no, the subsidy was for all of us. It was to allow us to get used to using the system, get comfortable with it, allow us to start developing a lot of the infrastructure and tools that we need to use it. But like, hey, the introductory period is over, and now we're going to start really paying for this thing based on what it's worth. And it's worth a freaking lot. Like, this is really valuable stuff.
Yeah, it's scary thinking about not being able to move Bitcoin that you thought was a whole Bitcoin. And in fact, it's 1,000 different UTXOs. Yeah, I don't like thinking about having my Bitcoin stuck.
Yeah, this is hard for Bitcoiners. When I gave this talk at BitBlock Boom on this topic, and I was actually worried that people were going to boo me. I mean, I'm a big boy. If people boo me, they boo me. But just trying to, like, I'd rather tell people the reality of this. And it's the way it kind of has to be. Because if you don't like it this way, then it almost forces you to become a big blocker. Like, this is the price that we pay, right? We could have bigger blocks, and then we wouldn't have high fees. But we'd also be moving toward, oh, hey, at some point I can't have a node because it requires an Amazon data center class server. You know, that's the trade-off. And so the way I like to think about it is, as long as we preserve what we have, then for all eternity, we can have a system that gives us access to a permissionless, hopefully censorship-free monetary network. But to expect that that's going to be free and on demand for all 8 billion people at all times, that's just unrealistic. So,
no, but I think that's where think layer two is like Lightning come into play.
Yes, exactly.
And with that, before we leave, I just did a very quick mempool TA, technical analysis, on the fees. As we can see, we are dropping slowly. We are forming a descending triangle from the... we're making lower highs and higher lows. That is forming a nice breakout maybe in 2 weeks around that 50... bytes per 50 bytes per byte, sats per byte. We're going to consolidate a little bit there, I think, and then rise again to ordinals. Valhalla, thank you very much.
Thank you
Yella.
That was very insightful. Very insightful.
Really like those consummate V's. I've totally lost my train of thought. Welcome Sean, welcome Rusty.
What's oh, good day. Hey, Greg.
Hey, Bob.
How's Hi, it going? Sean. Nice to see you.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
How you
Hey, Bob.
been? Hey, I got a question if Greg's drawn a blank over there.
Sure.
We think about a lot of times, when you come into Bitcoin, especially when you're early, I think the catch line that we always say is, you'll be your own bank. You get to be your own bank. And it seems like with block space being so limited and people having to move to layer twos, do you think that people get to from being their own bank to being their own quote unquote, money transmitter? They'll be able to, if the technology can get there, which I think eventually it will, that people will be able to not just, store their own keys, but do you think that they can get to a point where they can run their own layer twos? They can do a lot of different things with that's fairly easy because block space is so limited.
It's going to be paramount to Bitcoin fulfilling its vision that these layer two solutions keep propagating, because if they don't, then the money flows to BlackRock and Coinbase and places like that. I believe that it's been on a tremendous growth curve. But as I said earlier, it's my prediction. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think we have inside this next four-year window, we need nonlinear growth in the capabilities of whether it's Lightning, Fedi, things like that. They have to become better. And we have to come up with maybe like some new custodial models that people can get comfortable with. Like, yeah, obviously I don't like the ideas of like BlackRock, becoming a custodian, but if the network is such, like I was talking some numbers before, if you could only do one or two base layer transactions per year as an individual, you have to really plan that stuff out. Like if that's the whole capacity of the network is for each person to only do one or two, then you got to really think about it, right? If you're going to be an active Bitcoiner, you got to figure out, when am I going to move the money onto the base layer, or when am I going to take it off and up into these higher layers? I have a feeling what's going to happen is it's primarily going to be a one-way path for the average pleb, that it will be the deep storage path, right? So let's say you're performing a job, you're getting paid in Bitcoin. It's kind of acting like your long-term savings account. The base layer is really just acting as your long-term savings account, and maybe like major movements of money, buying a house, buying a car, those are like the major family emergencies. Like that's the only time that money is coming off of that base layer, and that because it's going to be so expensive, and so limited too. That's the other thing, is it regardless of if it's expensive or not, it's just not that available. You also have to probably plan way ahead. Like if you're going to want to pull money off of the base layer, I think it's something you're going to want to plan way ahead for, because there may not be a fee that you can pay to get it off quickly.
What I imagine here is you're going to have people who have significant Bitcoin savings, once or twice a year, either filling or opening up a Lightning channel for what they think they're going to spend for the next 6 months, 12 months. Does that sound about right?
Yep. That's a good way to phrase it. And also, I feel like I'm kind of giving bad news, but the other thing is we mentioned it earlier, out of band transactions. Okay. Well, there have been a handful of those that have occurred to date. They've mainly been centered around the ordinal stuff. Right, where like one of them was, we know Luxor took a large payment, filled a whole block with just one transaction outside of the Coinbase, and were paid off band for that transaction. Now, again, I'm not accusing them of anything nefarious, but nobody knows for sure how much money they got paid to do that and whether or not it was shared with the miners. We don't really know. But imagine a world where a really large percentage of transactions are occurring out of band. Because as an example, if you're a large financial institution, let's say, and you need to do 10,000 transactions a month, base layer, right? So you're a major custodian, but people are moving money in, people are taking money out. They got to move money around. They're doing UTXO consolidation. Let's say they have to do 10,000 a month. Well, what it was highly likely to occur is they're not going to put each of those transactions in the traditional method into the mempool. They're going to go find a major pool or pools or block template creators like we talked about before. And they're going to go say, hey, I'll give you X amount of money when I want to do a transaction, you include it in the next block. I want priority. And it's one of the dangers with the mempool and being able to calculate fees going forward is the more of that that's occurring out of band, you don't really know what you're fighting against. It's like having
miners on retainer, essentially.
That's exactly what it is, Sean. It's exactly like that. Yeah. And, you know, it can be good from the perspective of the financial community, because here's the thing from their perspective. I'm going to just wear their hat for a minute. What do they want? They want to know. They want to kind of have a known fee. Like, they don't want to have a variable fee, right? If they're doing 10,000 a month, this is a major cost item for them. They don't want a bunch of variability in the fee that they pay. They don't want to pay 20 sats per V-byte today and 600 sats per V-byte tomorrow. That's not a world that fits for them. They want that predictability. They also want to know with some certainty how fast they can get something done. So just keep it simple. If they align with a block template creator that is representing, let's say, 10% of the global hash rate, they know that basically that block template creator is going to have about 15 blocks a day. And so they would know, hey, if they go in and say, hey, I'm going to pay you, we'll call it a number, 300 sats per V byte for every transaction this next month. And I want 10,000 of them. I'm prepaying you for it, let's say. Now they have a known cost structure and they have a known response time. So that works for them. For the block template creator, which hopefully is a miner, that miner has a known revenue stream there. And as you know, miners, this is the funny thing too, miners have relied primarily on the subsidy for their revenue. Well, that's changing, right? You know, my prediction in this next cycle is that by the end of the next cycle, fees will be on average more than the subsidy. By the way, which means that this is probably the last halving that has a material impact on the ecosystem. Like the halving after this probably won't be that big of a deal because the halving only affects the subsidy part. So, you know, it would have a much lesser impact on the either miner revenue and the liquidity in the marketplace.
I thought you were continuing there.
Sorry. I was just thinking about all those implications, because I definitely think, you know, there's always the FUD goes back and forth, right? It goes from one end of the spectrum of, you know, we need these tail emissions after the last sat is mined. We need more Bitcoin mined, which I definitely disagree with. And because they say that the fees won't be enough to sustain it. And then right now the FUD is, well, the fees are so high that you can't use Bitcoin in a peer-to-peer manner. And so both ways. Yeah. So, you know, yeah. Just kind of Greg, right? So it's just interesting to really think about what it looks like, because I believe that the fees will be able to sustain miners into perpetuity. So just thinking about, does that transition happen this fast? Is it kind of breaks your mind. When will those things break? You know, when will those things break through, and what ultimately causes it? Because the way I look at it is fees are going to continue to go up, at least in, you know, in my mind, at least in fiat terms. I don't know if that necessarily means in Bitcoin terms will fees go up, but I do believe that the fiat price will continue to skyrocket and that the fees will go up higher and higher in fiat terms. But I'm not sure what that means for the actual Bitcoin.
I think Bob already said it. You missed it, Sean, that he's expecting a very high fee environment very soon in the future, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think we're just getting a taste right now.
Sorry, and I know I missed it. Was that due to things like ordinals or due to just overall transactions?
No, adoption. I think it's adoption that, you know, we're sitting, just for your benefit, Sean, the basic summary is, I think you were there when I said this number. There's only room for about 200 million transactions annually. That's it. So there's 8 billion people in the world. I don't even think we're close to 1% adoption right now. But I guess I'll use this number this time. 2% adoption means 160 million people. Okay. So if there's 160 million people using Bitcoin and there's 200 million transactions annually, that's about one per person. And that's ignoring the fact that there's 330 million companies. So if the companies are also trying to transact in Bitcoin or store it in their corporate treasury or, you know, those sort of things, well, that, you know, we're full, right? And that's why, I don't know if you were there, I was talking about scarcity being a nonlinear function. So, you know, we've been living, I think, just below the point where things go nuts, and ordinals happen to be the straw on the camel's back that has made it go nuts for, you know, relatively brief periods. I think we've had three major spike periods in calendar year 2023. But I'm not sure it pull. I think there'll be some brief periods of pullback, but the days of, you know, one or two sat per V byte transactions, I mean, I would, you know, I hope I'm wrong. You know,
one or two. I'll take 20.
Yeah. Right.
Seriously. Yeah. Yeah. Even 20. You know, yeah. I think it's good, right?
It's good that the good thing about ordinals is that it's preparing us for a high fee environment. And yeah, maybe it's sparking the minds of people who are really good at building on layer twos.
Yeah. So that can be. But what I do think, I mean, for the short term, I think the average person should not be happy about ordinals right now. They should look at it and say, hey, you're doing these things that are taking advantage of the witness discount. You're abusing the system, and you're forcing, you're taking away what may be my last chance to do efficient UTXO consolidation or things like that. The other thing is, like you said, Yellow, like, oh, you're hoping for even 20. Well, part of the problem is, like, the mempool has 350,000 transactions waiting for it right now. What we don't know is how many transactions do people really want to make, but they're not even bothering them to do them right now because they know they're not going to get them in. Like, they're not willing to pay these rates. Therefore, they're sitting on the sidelines. So as soon as the price does drop, those people rush in and say, oh my God, I have to do my UTXO consolidation. I have to send the money I owe to Greg or whatever. You know, I got to do that now while I still have the chance. And so it, which instantly, of course, will start causing it to spike.
Or another way, and I'm going to say this, especially now that Pedro can talk, use liquid.
I kind of
loves liquid.
Yeah,
Pedro loves liquid.
More than anything else.
Yeah, indeed. More.
I think he uses it. He's one of the power.
I think he named his newborn like liquid.
I think you're right. I absolutely think you're right.
It kind of seems like with home prices, right? The home prices, even though it's a high interest rate environment, home prices are still up. But then when they drop interest rates, it's just gonna lead to more people that, but get the price of homes are gonna continue to go higher because now it's people feel like they have a chance to buy at a low interest rate. It seems kind of like that's what's happening with the fees too, I guess.
But yeah, I think there's some analogy, but again, in my opinion, there's really only two absolutely scarce resources in the world: Bitcoin and block space, both in our world, right? And so we're just learning what that means now. When supply cannot react to demand, what happens? Right? I mean, because I gave you this apple tree example. I don't know if you were on for that, Sean.
I was, yeah, I was.
But because the logical thing would be like, hey, if demand goes from 100 apples today to 120 apples today, can't you make the apple tree grow more apples? Like, but and if it did, then there's minimal impact, right? But or even if it slides with it, like, okay, demand's at 120, but now we can make 110. And now it's 150, but we figured out how to make 125. Well, it's 100. Like in the Bitcoin world, it's 100 apples a day. That's it. And
Elastic.
yeah, there's really nothing we can do about it, because we're not the only ways to there's minor things we could do in transaction efficiency. We may see some of,
Miners or miners?
excuse me.
What,
You
Peter?
said miners?
Well, I think.
All right. No, right now. No.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I just need to be specific,
Yeah.
What's it?
So there's things that we as a community or users of Bitcoin could do to get a little more efficient. If I need to send money to all of you and I was in like a super low fee environment, I might make six transactions, right? If in a world with high fees, I might have, one input and six or seven outputs and make a little more complex transaction. So I think it'll force us to be a little more efficient. I'm not gonna, if I'm DCAing with my favorite Bitcoin company, wherever the hell that is, I'm not gonna move it over in $50 increments. I'm gonna wait until I can move it over in, $500 increments or 1 million sat increments, whatever the number is, right? So I think that will reduce some of the transaction demand and it can reduce the efficiency. And there's certain BIPs out there that might provide some technological ways of making transactions more compact, but it's not going to change 200 million to 2 billion. It might change 200 million to 300 million or 400 million. And when we're facing 8 billion people in the world and 330 million companies, it doesn't really matter, right?
What I'm hearing is we need to get rid of some people.
Yeah, man, like
Eugenesis.
Yeah. People
keep complaining, being negative for sort of no reason. Like, what did you do lately? Like, be positive,
Be
Yeah.
positive,
Well,
Why are you so
I
negative?
think this is, well, I think this, I want to point out too. I mean, I think it just shakes the paradigm because what happens, we talk as Bitcoiners like, not your keys, not your Bitcoin. It's true. But the other side of it is 8 billion people can't have their own keys. It just doesn't work. It would take 40 years if I had enough Bitcoin and I wanted to give every person in the world some, it would take 40 years to do that transaction.
Does that mean you're older than the normal Bitcoin user, or is that?
No, I'm just saying that if I had to send one Bitcoin transaction to every person in the world, it would take about 40 years of doing nothing else but distributing that Bitcoin. So that just kind of tells you, like, hey, we not everybody can hold their own keys, right? It's a great privilege. The early Bitcoiners have had a wonderful opportunity. It will always be available to those willing to pay for it, but it's not possible for everybody to do that. And I think I don't know if it was Sean or Yellow, you were talking about the kind of the ping-ponging of, oh, don't like high fees. Oh, we don't have enough money to secure the network in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're right. I think we're going through that. But very quickly, I think that mantra of, oh, there's not going to be enough money to secure the network, I think that's going to go away really, really quickly. And most of that, by the way, are shitcoiners, you know, trying to sell proof of stake or some other thing. That's going to go away really, really quickly. But the high fee thing, not really. And, you know, the other thing is, like, right now we have these 200 million transactions. Well, the value that moves through those 200 million transactions will probably radically change. So, because right now, I mean, there's still some really, really small transactions. As the space becomes more valuable, then the amount of value moving through it. And that's the big, you know, the big difference between the Bitcoin system and the traditional fiat system. A lot comes down to, what does it cost to move value? The fiat system is primarily based on percentages of the value moving. And we're based on the size of the transactions. So as the, we might think of it as a high fee environment, but when the transactions are moving in fiat terms today, moving hundreds of thousands and millions and tens of millions, if those are very normal transactions, the fees look insignificant, even at hundreds of sats per V byte.
Right. It's moving so much more value to begin with.
Yeah.
All right, Bob, I know we're working with a pretty hard stop here, so I want to give you a chance to talk a little bit about any of your projects you're working on, like Ocean, where people can find what you're writing, where they can find your new pod.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. Ocean.xyz, if you're a miner, go out there. We actually give you three template choices now, so you can use our standard one, which has got some spam filters on it. We give you one based on Bitcoin Core, which also has some spam filters. Or you can do the wide open one, you know, and we're there to hopefully propagate to the world the importance of independence in block template creation. Barefoot Mining, barefootmining.com. You know, we're usually continually looking for new investors. We bring up new sites all the time. We'll probably be launching a new fundraise in the first 2 weeks of January for a couple new sites. Twitter, I'm Boomer_BTC. Old Man Yells is my podcast. You can find that on YouTube. It's just me ranting. If you haven't had enough of this, then you can go get more there. I put out two or three a month. Sure, it's usually me talking for 20 to 30 minutes on some topic. And
sounds delightful.
Say that, Craig?
Sounds delightful.
Yeah. Well, gives me something to do. So,
all right. And I think we're going to skip the RD question for this evening and just move it all on over to Sean, and we'll talk about the halving real quick.
So, you know what happens at block height 840,000. The question is, are you and Lola coming to the halving party?
We haven't decided yet, but we really hope we can make it.
It's okay.
A great event. Like I said, I think this is the last halving, probably really worthy of a blowout celebration. So we should make the best of it.
You know,
it's the last innocent one.
Yeah, the last one without an ETF.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
The ETF might be here before the halving. Some people are speculating on that. Who knows?
All right. So the last innocent halving. Bob's talking about miners. We had a good time tonight, fellas.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. So I want to give Pedro the opportunity to just shut it off clean. I want to say thanks for everybody for joining us tonight. And Bob, really appreciate you making the time to come out.
Thanks for joining us, Bob.
Thanks, guys.
Now we're going to sit here awkwardly and hope
you
actually heard us.
Dun, 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 dun. Pedro, oh, Klaus, that's three.